welcome everybody to Authors on the Air. I'm in my second hour with brilliant authors that everybody knows and everybody wants to know more about. You are, I'm proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I know one of the most iconic characters in thrillers and mysteries is Jack Ryan, but one character who fascinates me even more is Jericho Quinn. If you're not reading Mark Cameron's book, you're missing out on a really cool character who is an OSI agent. I always get that backwards. OSI agent, but he's a motorcyclist and a boat guy, which fits right in my wheelhouse. I'm so excited to have the author of Jericho Quinn and the new Clancy Estate writer, Mark Cameron, with me. Hi, Mark. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Hi, Pam. Good to be here. Thanks.
So I love the fact that Jericho also loves BMWs and Harleys and all Ducatis and all this. And I kind of happen to notice that you like rice burners and motorcycles too.
I do. I do indeed. In fact, if you could see me, I'm wearing a BMW shirt right now, mechanic shirt.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm the oldest and the only girl. I have three younger brothers, or had three younger brothers. And so I used to race quarter-mile drag cars and then do motocross and ride Harleys and everything. And my mom used to shake her head when I'd come in, you know, with the suit and the boots and everything after riding and say, you know, what the heck? What happened here? You know, you're supposed to be the girl.
That's right.
That doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter, Mark.
No,
does it?
Not at all. Not at all. We see a lot of women on the road riding. It's a equal opportunity sport.
It really is. It really is. I'm fascinated by your history. You are a retired Chief Deputy U.S. Marshal. You spent over 30 years in law enforcement. You've been all over, everywhere, and a dozen points in between besides that. You also are a martial artist. You're a scuba diver, and you're a man-tracking instructor, which fascinates me. All the other things, I know what that means. What is a man-tracking instructor, Mark?
Well, that's a good question. You know, one of the major main missions of the United States Marshal Service is to find fugitives, to track fugitives. And so part of that entails boots on the ground tracking as well. And so one of my, probably my dearest friend, Ty Cunningham, is also my martial arts instructor, is a master tracker. And he started several, in fact, he started the International Association of Professional Trackers, and he started a tracking unit in Alaska, where I was with the Marshal Service, and also with the District of Wyoming and different parts around the United States. But anyway, so I've always, you know, been an outdoorsman, loved being outside, and sort of a self-taught naturalist, and so I really enjoy that anyway, and then learned from my friend Ty the actual science of tracking and how it goes hand in glove with not only tracking bad guys, but also lost individuals and building crime scenes and that sort of thing. So anyway, it's just exactly what it sounds, just looking at not just tracks, but all kinds of sign on the ground and in the air. And so because I enjoy it, then my characters employ it as well.
Mark, is man tracking only the physicality of tracking, or do you use a technical component as well?
Well, in the modern world, you know, in the olden days, I actually started writing, you know, started out in the publishing world writing westerns, and back in the olden days when you tracked someone, the tracker found that person. Nowadays it's very rare for the trackers themselves to actually find the person they're looking for. What we are generally trying to do is determine an azimuth or a direction of travel, and then we'll call in to air assets or, you know, ATVs or people on horseback or whatever, and put them ahead of us and get them to cross the trail and find the people. So we use everything at hand. The point is not to be the one to find them. The point is to find them. So in this day and age, especially in Alaska, we'll use air, boat, whatever. And then, you know, and then besides the actual physical boots on the ground tracking, there's, you know, looking at tracks, there's also kind of the, I hate to say metaphysical because that sounds kind of woo-hoo, you know, but it's not. People leave a certain air behind them when they
an
when
essence
they run.
Of themselves, right?
An essence,
an
yeah,
essence
an essence.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And so when you see it, particularly in an urban environment, and I talk about this in a couple of the books. I think in the Clancy book I talk about it a little bit. In one of the earlier Jericho books, Jericho's chasing somebody through Vegas, and the guy gets away from him initially, but he can basically, through using the same sort of observation skills that you use by looking at tracks and building the story from there, he can look and see, you know, people looking at the direction of somebody, you know, just the differences that as you say, the essence. It's kind of an interesting thing. In Alaska, you notice that when you're looking at caribou or other kinds of animals, particularly caribou, if one caribou is spooked, all the other caribou for a long time afterwards, when they walk past that same spot, they notice something's wrong, and they'll, you know, whether it's a scent or whatever. So it's just an observation.
You have spent your career in law enforcement in you know, with doing these wonderful things with the U.S. Marshals Service as a deputy, chief deputy. But had you always had a desire to write? Or did this come out of your experience? Really?
No, I wanted to write from the time I was a small boy. My aunt, she's a retired librarian. My mother and father are both teachers. My grandmother was a teacher. My wife is a teacher. I've been around books and reading my whole life. And I really wanted to write stories. I used to write, my mom's probably got boxes of old legal pads and spiral notebooks that I was filled up with stupid stories. And when I got married, actually when I asked my wife to marry her, I told her I wanted to be a novelist and a drama teacher. At that point I was taking theater in college. That's where I met her. Yeah. And I told her that I wanted to be teach college theater. And, but I really didn't. I was just telling her that, I think, to convince her to marry me. And I confessed. I confessed to her right before we got married that I wanted to be a cop and a novelist. And thankfully she married me anyway. And that I got a job as a policeman in a small town. And, that year, she gave me, we were poor. I made $6.60 an hour. And she, this would have been in 1984. And she bought me a bulletproof vest and a Smith Corona electric typewriter that first year. And just said, be happy and do your thing. So she's been
a
huge support throughout. Yeah, no kidding. Just the knowledge that she was okay with it. Of course, then she'd pat me on the butt and say, go write us a couch or go write us a new fridge or, you know, whatever, get to work. So,
how many books or manuscripts, I guess I should say, did you write before you became published as an adult? We don't count those ones that you wrote as a kid that mom is still
the Tommy
keeping
the
in boxes.
And all. Yeah, no,
I
never count those.
Right.
I wrote a lot of short stories, and then my first novels were published, but it took me a while to get them published. And then, sadly, I wrote, let's see, 6 novels. My first 6 novels were published, and then the next 2 were rejected. When I tried to switch over from Westerns to thrillers, those first 2 got rejected, and basically they were set in Alaska. I couldn't figure out whether I wanted to have a, You know, I was kind of learning how to put the Westerns are sometimes a little more linear, and I was a horseshoer,
sure.
and I spoke the vernacular with Westerns, and I just was learning. And so I got some really nice, I already had a literary agent, so they were being trotted around New York, and I got some really nice rejection letters, like page and a half long rejection letters saying, here's what you can do to fix this, and which is just unheard of in this business.
Yes.
I mean, nowadays,
right.
you're lucky to get a response at all if they don't want to. And so
right.
I took that advice to heart, and actually it kind of pissed me off, and I wrote what I thought was kind of a over-the-top, crazy adventure story about a guy that rides a motorcycle and carries a sword under his jacket, and that turned out to be Jericho Quinn, and that hit. So kind of fun to write. My son is an OSI agent, or was. He's in med school now, but our oldest son was in
the academy at the time. Wait a minute, OSI
yeah.
and med school. Let's see, where's the connection? You know, let's
exactly.
figure that one out. Well, good for him. I think that's great.
Yeah.
And your other son does
yeah.
what?
He's a police officer in Anchorage.
My. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right?
Yeah, well, thankfully they're intellectually take after their mother, so
I don't know about that.
Smart kids.
You're a darn
yeah.
fine writer. So,
well, thank you.
Before we go back and talk about Jericho, I want to talk about the Clancy estate.
Jack
sure. Ryan is icon
mm-hmm.
to just about anybody who has lived in this century. You know,
right.
Jack Ryan, you automatically envision him from movies and of course if you read Tom Clancy and everything else. How did that come about that you ended up writing this book for them?
Yeah, that's a really good story. I had back several years ago, I went to BoucherCon in Long Beach and met Mark Graney and
Mark,
his wife.
Of course.
And yeah,
yeah,
and
great
we
guy.
Became friends. Oh, he is just a fantastic guy. And we became friends over the years and, you know, ran to each other and into each other at Thriller Fest and BoucherCon,
right.
you know, various BoucherCons around the country. And last, so I guess 2 years ago in
Raleigh.
Yeah, what was it after Raleigh?
Toronto.
In New Orleans. Yeah. Well,
oh, New Orleans. I'm sorry. It was New Orleans
in the middle.
Toronto.
So, right. So in New Orleans, we had, I had chatted with him then, and he, you know, I'm a Court Gentry fan. He reads my books, and we were talking at dinner or something, and he said, hey, why don't you send me your newest Jericho and let me do a cover blurb for it. And you know how that is. Everybody's
sure.
always looking for cover blurbs and whatnot,
blurbs.
But I hate to
Absolutely.
Ask people. Yeah, the book blurbs and author quotes, and I just hate to ask my friends, and so I never had to ask him, but that was great. That was just, that's a really typical Mark Graney thing
good
to
people,
do,
though.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I sent him off the PDF of the manuscript of the newest Jericho at the time, Field of Fire, and he said some nice things about it, and I trotted on thinking, oh, that was the end of everything, and I would work on my next, we were breaking off and doing another series as well, and so my wife and I were actually down in Port Charlotte doing some research, and in Florida doing some research, and I got a call from my agent, and she said, Mark Graney gave your manuscript to Tom Colgan, and they looked at it at Putnam, and they want you to be the next Clancy writer. And so Mark was so secretive about it. He never said a word to me. He just forwarded it on, and that's how it happened. He, you know, a lot of people think when they saw him after doing Seven that they thought, oh, Mark,
right.
why'd you get fired? But he didn't get fired. He wanted to focus on some other things, and
yeah,
so very kindly recommended me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great guy. He really is. I met him in person down here. He was at a Southwest Readers Fest. You know, Mark's a big, tall guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a really tiny little person. So, but he's just as gracious and generous as they come. There's no doubt.
Yep.
So how did you feel having to write a Clancy novel?
That's funny. I my wife has a picture of me standing on the beach talking on my cell phone. She thought someone had died because I had this stricken look on my face. And so she thought, I better record this for posterity here. And then shortly after that, I just fell over with a headache because, you know, one of those glass Kravitz sick headaches, you know, just the,
right.
Just terrified.
How could this
and
be?
I was talking to,
right.
Yeah, and I was talking to Tom Colgan, the editor, about it, and you know, it occurred to me that had I not been terrified, I probably would have been the wrong guy to ask. But
you might be right. Yeah.
You know, I started reading Clancy's back when Clancy first hit the bookstores,
yeah.
As a, you know, I started police work in 1984. I was going to the academy when Hunt for Red October came out.
Right.
I remember where I was during all these books when they came out, and in fact, Some of All Fears came out when I was heading to a judicial protection assignment for the World Trade Center when it was bombed the first time. And, you know, I remember those times.
Right.
And so I know those characters, and I kind of grew up in the law enforcement community with those characters. And so it's daunting because I wanted to make sure that although I can never be Tom Clancy, I can write a Mark Cameron book in the spirit of Tom Clancy, and I can sure try really hard to stay true to his characters and also, you know, to Mark's characters that he's developed since then.
Well, I want listeners to know that Mark's book is called Power and Empire. It is a spectacular book.
Thank you.
That absolutely does both Tom Clancy and Mark himself and Mark Graney. It just does you proud. It's a fascinating read. I love this genre so much, but I want to kind of move on because
While
that's great, you are one heck of a writer on your own. You have, I mean, you've got a whole ton of books on your own. You've got what, 9 or 10 books now? 9 books, I think, under your own name that are not related to Tom Clancy. And every single one of them are amazing. I mean, you scare the crap out of me, I have to tell you, because it's so realistic. Do you know what I'm saying, Mark? Like, it feels so real. You are taking real-world possibilities and turning them into these great thrillers.
How did you
figure out who Jericho Quinn was? Where did he come from? Is he you? I mean, I know every character is a little bit of the author, but how did you develop Jericho? Because he's kind of, you know, he's a pretty kick-ass guy.
Well, he's certainly not me. I think he's what I wish I was. He's, you know, I mentioned that our oldest son is a, well, I'll just describe just really quickly my kids. Our oldest son was an OSI agent. He's an Air Force Academy grad. He speaks Mandarin Chinese and a little bit of Japanese. And our daughter is a rock climber and also rides a motorcycle. And our youngest son is a police officer and also rides motorcycles with me. And we're all outdoor type people. And so I just took a bit of them and I'm a martial artist and we've already talked about the man tracker stuff and I enjoy motorcycles and I had the opportunity to work alongside some just incredible men and women over the years and I just picked and choose, you know, kind of went to the Sears catalog of heroes and picked out what I wanted and put it all together and Jericho is a little bit of all of that, but what I think makes him real, at least in my mind, is that there may not be an actual Jericho Quinn, but there's men and women that are just that smart and just that tough. Plus he gets hurt a lot. You know, if you read the books, you know that he little bits and pieces of him get whittled off. In fact, on almost every book, he loses a toe or a piece of an ear or, you know, some bit of skin or a broken bone or some brain cells from getting hit in the head again. And so he's human, and he's fragile,
yes,
like we all are. And so,
yes,
I tried to make him real in that regard, but he is also driven. And I think that's what makes him more loved, is not so much that he's superhuman or even an extra kick-ass guy. He's driven. He does the right thing. Like Jack Ryan does the right thing. He does it no matter what.
But Jericho also carries the results of the past mission with him. And that's,
yeah,
I think, what's important. You know, I think
that's
if
reality.
You have a character who bounces back and it's like, okay, I'm 100% again, let me go, that seems unrealistic,
mm-hmm,
to me. But
mm-hmm,
Jericho doesn't do that. I mean, he carries all that with him. And whether it makes him sad or whether it makes him more determined, but it's still the result of the past. And he pulls
right.
it forward. And I like that about your character, Mark. I like that very much.
I appreciate that. That's why I like to keep writing him. And I think that all, you know, that's the reality. That's what we all do. And I have several friends with the Marshal Service that are part of our peer support group. And they go out. And I was so far away in Alaska that I couldn't respond quickly to go help people that have been involved in shootings or, you know, tragic situations. But
sure,
many of my friends did that. And it was talking to them about, you know, we'd have them come up and help out some of our guys that were in different shootings and, you know, officer involved things.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You can't go through this kind of work without that sort of baggage. And it doesn't mean you have to be sad all the time. It doesn't mean that you, if you're in a shooting, you have to mope around, but you do carry a bit of a scar,
right,
you know, every time. And not just from that, from just seeing someone in pain, or, you know, from
absolutely,
my more traumatic times were on patrol, you know, dealing with sexual assault victims or kids or, you know, that sort of thing. That it adds up. It doesn't have to overwhelm you, but sometimes it does.
Well, I agree. I worked for a long time with police departments as a certified victim advocate. And actually, you mentioned the World Trade Center after the bombing. The small police force that I worked with in Miami actually sent officers up there, as did everyone in the country, and
mm-hmm,
came back. They came back and, you know, the debriefing was really hard, even though these police officers maybe did traffic or, you know, crowd control or whatever it was. So, excuse me, I'm happy to know that your characters incorporate that experience, and it does make them stronger, but makes them more human too. And that's a real character. So,
well, I appreciate
I wanna,
that.
I want to, first of all, right now, I just want to talk about national security. This,
sure,
this is the new book, right? Am I incorrect with that?
No,
this is the first book.
Actually,
it's the first,
the very
book,
first book, but they're re-releasing
right?
it as a trade paperback.
I love it. Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
You know, this is the first one in the series, and so it came out in 2011, I think, 2010, sometime back there. Anyway, that's the one that introduced Jericho. So actually one of the characters that's everybody's favorite is Veronica Garcia, and she didn't come about until the next books. So it's a whole different woman in this book, but you do get to see that one of the things about Jericho that I've seen in so many of my law enforcement friends, I'm very fortunate that I have the wife that I do that stayed married to me for almost 35 years now, that through,
congratulations,
you know, a law enforcement life. And that's not always the case with husbands and wives,
right,
of law enforcement officers. It's really hard life, as some, you know, other jobs are as well. But
sure.
So Jericho's wife has divorced him, and she's basically telling him, I love you, but I can't live this kind of life. And he feels compelled,
right,
to continue. So he's making a decision as well. And but he still loves her. And so that allows him to have, in my opinion, a lot of the books can have a lot of sexual tension, but no, he doesn't have a girl in every port. He's not James Bond.
Right.
There can be sexual tension in every book, but I don't have to, you know, I'm not a prude by any sense of the word, but I don't have to, I would rather focus on the mission and let Jericho go and kick some ass and not worry about finding any, you know? I just left him in love with his wife.
And I appreciate that. Because it's part of who he is. It's part of life. Let's be serious.
But
you don't have to be explicit with anything. I want listeners to know that Mark is a best-selling author. If you could see his reviews on Amazon and other sites, you would just smile to yourself. That's why I want you really to go and start with National Security, which is the first book in Jericho Quinn. You're going to love this book. I mean, he's gotten thousands of reviews. You know, the book is magnificent. Get it in Kindle if you have to. It's $8. My God, it's so cheap. Publishers Weekly, who never gives a good review, just raves about it. So congratulations on that. So I want to take a kind of a kick back a little bit and kind of ask you about you. How does it feel to be a published author and to get so many accolades?
It feels very good, humbling, very humbling. writers are, and you interview a lot of them, so you know, but writers have this two-headed beast fighting in us all the time where we think – my stuff all sucks, but we have enough hubris that we want to push it out in front of everybody and say, oh, this sucks, but you really need to read it. And it's a hard thing to deal with. So when a publisher buys it or an agent picks you up as a client, and then you get good reviews. And I don't read my reviews. My wife reads them once in a while to me, but I just steer clear of them. I read them for National Security and a few for Act of Terror, and then people said something mean, and I can read 155 star reviews and not think they're true, but one star, and it just guts me for 2 weeks, and so I just don't do it. I just find that
Mark,
it's better
you have to
just
have
march
your
on.
You've got to have your one star cherry popped on every single book.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah, exactly.
you aren't a real author anymore, right?
Exactly. So, and that's the way it is. That's the truth. But I just don't see anything fun about reading them. So I just write.
There you go. So what's the worst thing about being a published author?
I really I can't. I think the self-imposed angst from deadlines and whatnot.
My wife and I go to
the South Pacific to some, a friend has a place down there, and we stay with him at his place. And so I was working on the first Clancy, and I was so nervous. I was just a nervous wreck. And I went to confide in my wife, and I just finished up a Jericho and actually another book. I finished up another book and first one in a new series. And I was working on this Jericho, and I went to confide in her, and I was soaking my feet in the pool and talking to her and whining. And she swam up to me under the palm trees, and she said, "Okay, Mark, let me get this straight. You're a New York Times bestselling author who has the next Jack Ryan book under contract. You get to write on an island in the middle of the South Pacific,
and you're
sad."
Complaining.
And I said, "Yeah, all right, I'll go back to work. Have a good time."
I love her already.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
We're running out of time, but I have a couple more questions that I want to ask you. What is something we would be surprised to learn about you, Mark?
Ah, boy. Somebody asked me the other day what kind of quotes, because we put the little epigrams at the front of every book whatnot. Somebody asked me what my favorite quote was, and I can't think of my favorite quote, but I read my favorite quotes are A.A. Milne quotes, like Winnie the Pooh.
Really?
It's
interesting.
Killing. Yeah, but I really like that kind of quote. I find
that's cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Tell everyone where they can find you on the webs, please.
Yeah, I'm at Mark Cameron Books, www.markcameronbooks.com, and Mark Cameron Author on Facebook. And honestly, I don't tweet and I don't have Instagram. I I get spanked by the editors for not doing that, so I probably will someday.
Well.
But I don't. I'm just too.
You're writing.
Too busy writing,
writing
or writing.
There
so.
You go. What is the name of your dog? You have a do you still have a blue heeler?
The blue heeler just passed away, but my son just actually adopted a blue heeler named Abby. So she comes over and chats with me all the time. My dog's name was Maisie, but
very
she listened
cool
to everything that
very
I wrote. So yeah,
well, there
great
you
dogs.
Go. There you go. I hope you come back and visit with me again. I'd love to have Mark Cameron and Mark Graney on the same show. You think I can make that work?
Oh, I know we could make that work. I know we can make
all
that
right.
work. I love chatting with you. You got an easy way on the radio, Pam. You're great.
Thanks, Mark. I'm so honored that you came to visit with me. Mark Cameron, that's M-A-R-C Cameron. Go check out Jericho Quinn and also the new Jack Ryan book. Mark, you're the best. You and I'll talk again
hey,
soon,
thank
won't
you.
We? All
thanks
right.
Thanks a million. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that's my show right now. I want to say thank you. I'll be back at 8 o'clock with CJ Box. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Talk to you soon.